You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. Joining me now, the man who creates, I think, more content than anyone else. His Sunday back column is always a must read. His notes and thoughts. It is Steve Simmons from the Toronto Sun. Good afternoon, Steve. Thanks for joining the show.
Happy to be doing this, Matt, as always.
And I was thinking about you a little while ago because you were tweeting out about the upcoming Class of 2022 Baseball Hall of Fame. It's going to be announced today. If Bonds and Clemens and Schilling, those three, your thoughts on whether or not they should or should not get the 75% of the votes required?
Well, we could do about an hour and a half just
yes,
trying
we can.
To answer that question.
I know.
because it's multifaceted, and it's almost to the point of frustration, difficult to explain. And in the case of Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, we're talking about performance-enhancing drugs. Where do you sit on the scale of that? Are you willing to look the other way and vote for the best player maybe of our generation and maybe the best pitcher of our generation? Or do you look at the words that the Hall of Fame sends out with the ballots that it sends to writers, and I happen to be one of them, and they use the words character and the words dignity, and I forget what the third word is off the top of my head. But every time I see those words, and I think steroid usage, and I think Barry Bonds' head being one size at one time of his career, and looks like he was a movie actor that they built up for another part in the later stages of his career, and I could not vote for him. Based on, you know, the 73 home run season and things he did in the second half of his career, that didn't seem logical to me. And it was the same thing with Roger Clemens. And so what you wind up doing is then you look at who was attached in any way to performance-enhancing drugs. And if you've made the decision to vote for them, then you're going to vote Bonds and you're going to vote Clemens and you're going to vote Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez and Sammy Sosa and Gary Sheffield. And there's a whole bunch of them that really are all great ball players, all Hall of Fame level ball players. There's no doubt that these guys do not belong in the Hall of Fame if there were no rules. If anybody, just the best players go in, then those guys would have been in already. This is the 10th time for Bonds and Clemens and Sosa, who somehow gets pushed to the side in this conversation for some reason for a guy who had more than 600 home runs. But this is their last chance. I don't believe they're going to get in. I think the same people vote for them every year. There's 400-plus voters. They get in that 60% range. You've got to get to 75%. Somebody made an interesting point the other day. I think it was Jason Stark in The Athletic. And he said, think of this in your own terms. If you have 10 friends together and you're trying to figure out where to eat that night, can you get 7.5 people to agree to anything?
No.
So you're asking writers to agree on 75%, which is a real tough number, which is why getting in the Baseball Hall of Fame, in my opinion, I think it's the greatest Hall of Fame because of all, never mind all the controversies now with steroids and PEDs and all that, because it's so hard to get in. And so it's possible that Bonds and Clemens will be removed from the ballot after this year, along with Curt Schilling, who I did vote for. And Curt Schilling's case is completely different. It's basically about him being a semi-disgusting human being. And I guess some people don't want a semi-disgusting human being in the Hall of Fame. I figure there's a bunch of those in already. And let's look at what he did on the field. And what he did on the field was Hall of Fame quality. What Bonds and Clemens did on the field was also Hall of Fame quality with the asterisk the asterisk being, you know, when did they take drugs? How much drugs did they take? And how much did they change their career? In the case of Clemens, that he pitched better between the ages of 30 and 40 than he did between the ages of 20 and 30 always startled me. And his stats, even into his 40s, startled me. If you remember when he came to Toronto, he was coming to Toronto on a sort of a downscale.
Yes.
And then one saw Young's back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what we found out after the fact? I mean, those were probably the two greatest Blue Jay pitching seasons we've ever seen, and that's with Robbie Ray winning the Cy Young this year. We find out after the fact that that's also when he began to get his shots of whatever he was getting.
I guess, Steve, the pushback, and everything you say makes sense, and there's going to be a lot of people that agree with you, and you know the rules about character and everything. My pushback would be, one, what about everything they did before the quote-unquote start of the steroid era? I would throw in also, we don't know how many players they faced who were taking steroids, so that could negate whatever advantages they had. And baseball, even before steroids, had buckets of amphetamines that you could take, you know, or uppers or whatever to try to get you ready for a game. Oh, and the last point, the Hall of Fame is a museum. It is there to teach you the history of the game. So put the asterisks there.
You know what I'd love to see, if it's possible? I'd love to see them send out a ballot and remove some of the terms of voting. Wide open, you just vote. Right now, Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame. He has the most hits in baseball history. Barry Bonds, I don't think, will be elected today, which means he'll be removed from the ballot after 10 years. He's the all-time home run leader. Roger Clemens with, you know, just absolute a career 312 earned run average. You know, that's insane. 354 wins and a 312 earned run average.
In the American League East, by the way, doing that against, like, stacked Yankees teams for many years.
Yeah, for most of it. And he would, you know, he one of the great pitchers of all time, won't be in. The 600 home runs hitter, Sammy Sosa, not in. Mark McGwire, already off the ballot, not in. Alex Rodriguez now with 696 home runs. You know, this is his first time. So we're going to see what happens. And, you know, I would love to see an area of the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown where, as a museum, they designate that the following players have been elected under these circumstances. Drugs, gambling, whatever the thing was. And then have an area where there's Bonds, there's Clemens, there's A-Rod, there's Manny Ramirez, there's Pete Rose. But unfortunately, it's not going, you know, Pete Rose still banned from baseball. That's not going to happen. And so now all of this is going to go to the, I think it's called the Golden Era Committee, but I always call it the Veterans Committee.
Yeah.
Where they vote for players who have been passed over for a number of years. And they go back. I mean, this year, I think Jim Cott and Tony Oliva were among those elected. Again, you're going to get guys in a room, and they're mostly ex-players and ex-GMs and ex-managers on this committee. And some of those guys are very anti-drugs and very anti-steroids. So I wonder how they're going to view, you know, Bonds and Clemens in the future as well, and whether they get, you know, whether the right, because they change the committee all the time, whether the right group of guys get to the point where they're going to vote in, you know, these people. But, you know, like I said, we're not talking about just average guys here.
No.
You know, Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player I've ever seen.
Steve, in his last year, his OPS would have led baseball the last 2 years.
But this is why I find voting for, I almost wish now that maybe I should have just resigned and as a voter. Maybe I should have, because I feel terrible about not voting for these guys. And I think I would feel terrible if I was voting for them. If you understand the dilemma of all
yeah.
that. And I wrote a column maybe a month ago or so about the ballot isn't about who's on it anymore. It's who you're not voting for. Like, you're allowed to vote for up to 10 players. And if you look at this year's ballot, Bonds is one, and Ramirez is one, and Sosa is one, and Clemens is one, and Rodriguez is one, and David Ortiz, who might get in today, is one. Gary Sheffield, all these guys had Hall of Fame careers. It's not like you're saying, oh, they don't measure up baseball-wise. Well, they all do measure up baseball-wise. And they surpass so many people that are in there. And I'll add Clemens and Schilling to that list as pitchers. And I'll add one guy who I voted for in every year before this year and didn't this year, in Omar Vizquel, the shortstop, who I think is the greatest American League shortstop I've seen in my lifetime. And I believe defense is one of the areas in the Hall of Fame that doesn't get enough respect. And so I was a big Omar Vizquel thing, voter and supporter, until what happened, you know, domestic abuse and then other charges of different forms of abuse. And of anybody, if Omar Vizquel, I think, was in the 50% range or thereabouts the end of last year, of all the players on this year's ballot, he's going to drop the most, because whatever happened to him or in his life that has gone public has really turned the voters against him. And it's like, okay, I didn't vote for him this year, and I felt, again, it was that character dignity thing. And yet none of what happened to him happened on the baseball field. It happened off the baseball field. So, you know, in a perfect world, you know, Bonds and Vizquel and Sheffield and Ramirez and Sosa and A-Rod and, again, Ortiz, who I think is going to get in today, and Schilling and Clements will not get in this Hall of Fame. And that, I think, goes back to the Hall of Fame now to look at what their structure is for voting and possibly change the parameters.
Steve, I really appreciate you coming on. And I think my favorite part was just you just realizing how difficult this is, and that no matter what, you are in a lose-lose. And I'll just say this. I wish all those guys got voted in today, but I do understand and appreciate your perspective on it.
One more guy I just want to mention, because I do vote for him every year, and he doesn't seem to get enough
yeah.
push, in my opinion, is Andruw Jones, longtime center fielder for the Atlanta Braves. Again, as you know, to me, there's only been a few outfielders of his quality in my lifetime that I can think of, and Devon White was one of them. Just brilliant, brilliant outfielder, and a very good offensive player. And I think for some reason, again, the voter, the Hall of Fame, whoever it is, doesn't take the time. And the other thing is that the metrics for defense, the advanced stats for defense, aren't accurate, in my opinion. And don't take my opinion for it. I asked Pat Gillick about it, and Pat Gillick said that they don't make sense to him either. And, you know, Pat Gillick's the smartest baseball person I know, so I'm going to defer to him on that. But Andruw Jones, to me, should be in the Hall of Fame almost from without having a single hit, just from the way he played center field.
I'd be shocked if he doesn't get in. But again, if he was a basketball player, he would have been in first ballot Hall of Fame.
Well, everybody in basketball gets in. Yes. If you breathe, you get in basketball.
It is the Mitch Richmond rule. Steve, all the best. Read his work, his piece today on racism in the NHL. We will chat soon, my friend. I wish we had more time.
Be well.
Take care. That is Steve Simmons from the Toronto Sun. All right. On the other side, we had hundreds of people writing in their top five worst sports moments as a sports fan. We give our list next, and it's going to be an interesting perspective. My producer is around 25. I'm a little bit older. We'll get into that. But first, traffic.
This is Gameplay on TSN 1050.
This is found money. I want to parlay it. I want to make a big score.
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
It's King Kong Bundy, always looking for that big five count. Wants the five. And the referee obliges him. Give me a break, Brett.
We do this every Tuesday. It is our Tuesday Top 5. And today, in honor or dishonor of the Buffalo Bills losing the way they did to the Kansas City Chiefs, we are doing our Top 5 sports losses of all time. The ones that hurt. This is an emotional one. This doesn't have to be based on any analytics. So let's get to it. Your number 5 is what? There, producer Austin.
My number 5, Matt, let's go back to the year 2018. It's the summer. England is in the World Cup semifinals playing the little tiny nation Croatia. England, about 4 times the amount of people of Croatia. All the top players, best league in the world, they lose that semifinal after scoring the first goal of the game in extra time. Absolutely crushed me. I was watching with my family from England. And let's just say there were some tears. The closest England's come to bringing it home. Hopefully, they get closer in the near future.
That was a tough one. Yeah, I do remember that. But Croatia's got better red wine. My number 5. I'm going to go the 2015 ALCS. Jays losing 4-2 to Kansas City. And the moment that was the killer one. Game 2 of that series. KC had won the first game. Toronto was up 3-0 in the 8th inning. David Price had retired 18 consecutive batters. Then Escobar, he gets a leadoff single. Then Ben Zobrist, it's a pop-up to shallow right field, and Ryan Gorenz and Jose Bautista mix up their defensive signals. The ball hits. It's a single. It starts that horrible inning, and it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, I remember that one. David Price was dealing that day, too. Absolutely dealing.
Oh, and that 2015 team coming off bat flip and how much fun 15 was. And also, why this one is extra painful, Kansas City would go on to play the Mets?
The World Series.
In the World Series. Toronto would have won the World Series.
Oh, what could have been? That's why it hurts. Number 4 for me, Matt, I'm going to take you to an even not so distant future of 2019 AFC Championship game. Tennessee Titans losing to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, what makes this one so painful is the Titans were up. They were up by 3 scores at the end of the first half. Mike Vrabel takes the timeout, trying to get the ball back. Patrick Mahomes gets the first down. The rest is history. That epic run that Patrick Mahomes went on was because Vrabel took a timeout. Titans would never look back after it. It was an absolutely soul-crushing loss. I never thought they were going to go to the Super Bowl till the game started, and then I was super hurt.
And Mike Vrabel does get to keep his penis. My number 4, I thankfully did not buy a ticket. I flew down to Tampa for the Super Bowl in 2000, Giants taking on the Baltimore Ravens. Thankfully, I thought I had enough money to buy a ticket. I was very wrong. I had no idea how expensive it was. And this one is crushing. And not because it was a close loss, but just the Giants got killed 34-7 to Baltimore. And I legitimately thought they had a chance. And they had a Jesse Armstead had an interception return for a touchdown, called back on some stupid defensive penalty. But Giants losing 34-7 to Baltimore. That's my number 4.
Yeah, that's a good one. Kerry Collins might make an appearance on my list a little later as well, Matt. My number 3. It's the Raptors and the Nets. 2007, though, the first round series, 2007. Why does this one hurt me so much, Matt? Because Vince Carter had been traded from the Raptors in 2006. This team, the Toronto Raptors, had just won the Atlantic Division for the first time in franchise history. They're taking on the Nets, who are the 6th seed. And what happened? Vince Carter ripped my soul out once again. The Nets beat the Raptors in 6 on a Jose Calderon turnover to Chris Bosh. Love you, Jose. It was a bad pass. Vince Carter and the Nets beating the Raptors, I will never get over that or how he left this city.
Yep, and that's funny that you mentioned Vince Carter because he makes my list, but one that you probably were a little bit young. But the Raptors losing Game 7 to Allen Iverson and the Philadelphia 76ers. Toronto had won their first playoff series earlier against the Knicks, and it was Iverson versus Vince, both of them trading 50-point games. And if you remember, Vince Carter was at his university graduation the day before, and then he misses the final shot as Philly goes on to win.
Mail it to you. Why do you got to fly there? I'm not going to start. My number 2, Tennessee Titans. They're the number 1 seed in 2008. They go 13-3. Vince Young goes off the rails a little bit. Kerry Collins comes in, steps them up. What do? They get the bye. faced Joe Flacco as a rookie and the Baltimore Ravens in 2008. Former Titan Samari Roll, former Titan Frederick Mason on these teams. And the Ravens beat the Titans 13-10 in an absolute ref show. I watched the highlights from this, Matt. The refs let Joe Flacco get away with at least three delay of games. They missed holding calls all over the field. I thought the Titans were going to win that Super Bowl that year. 13-3. Chris Johnson was not to be. First round exit to the Ravens. That one hurt.
Yep. And again, you've got so many years ahead of you of pain. You have so many years. My number two. It's been asked about, so here it is. The Maple Leafs with a legitimate chance of winning the Stanley Cup. You can take your collapses against Montreal, against Boston, but here's the thing. Those teams were never going to win the Stanley Cup. That 93 Gilmore team could have won the Stanley Cup. Game six, missed high stick by Gretzky. Carey Fraser, what are you doing? They go on, the Kings go on to beat the Leafs 6-5-4. But then there's a game seven, and Gretzky gets a hat trick. Kings win that game 5-4. One goal games in both of them to eliminate. Toronto could have faced Montreal. They would have won the Stanley Cup. They would have beat Patrick Waugh. Instead, they lose on my birthday in 1993.
Oh,
losing
on
game seven
birthday?
To the Kings. May 29th, 1993. My 18th birthday. I could now drink in Calgary legally. So that's my number two.
Oh, it's a good thing you remember the game still. My number one, Matt, is also the Toronto Maple Leafs. How could it not be?
Yeah.
They're up 4-1 against Boston Bruins in 2013. Fun story about this game. I was actually at work because I was in about grade 11.
Yeah.
So I was working during that, and I got my then-girlfriend at the time to call in and say a family emergency. So I had to go. I got home when it was 2-0. Boom. We're looking good. 3-0. Oh, my goodness. 4-1. 10 minutes left. We're good. They lose the game. I didn't leave the couch for 2 hours, and I got fired, so it all topped it off.
You got, what was the job?
No frills, so you know, there's another no frills later on.
Right, yeah. And the fact you got fired, nice touch there. Right? My number one, it's the first sports loss, the first one that hurt. You always remember that. I am like 9 years old. The Blue Jays, ALCS against the Kansas City Royals. They were up 2-0 in that series. They were up 3-1 in that series. And the Royals would win games 5, 6, and 7. I'll never forget the Toronto Star. The cover the next day just said Blue Days instead of Blue Jays. And that was the first time I ever cried because of a sporting event. So that's my number one. Good list. Good list by you. You've got many more years of hurt in you, my friend. But a solid job. And I love the fact you got fired from your
darkness,
job.
Yeah, it did work out well, right? Yeah. Sorry, I just think the song's so appropriate here. In the dark place now.
Yeah.
Oof,
yeah.
Let's get Joe House to get happy in here, Matt.
That's
please.
It. Joe House from Fairway Roland, from the Ringer Gambling Show. You're here with Bill Simmons all the time. Joins us next. Time now for traffic. Welcome back, everyone. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. Joining me now. He's a man who wears many hats, the Fairway Roland podcast, all things golf. Also, he's on weekly on the Ringer Gambling Show. You hear him with Bill Simmons. He was doing the NFL Food City Playoffs as well. It is Joe House. Joe, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for joining the show today.
Matthew, we're doing it all, baby. 2022 is our year.
Damn right. I am 8-2 against the spread so far these playoffs.
That's outstanding. I do not share that mark. I put some undeserved faith in the Tennessee Titans last week, and I also unfortunately bet against Patrick Mahomes, which is, you know, just not that wise of a thing to do.
You know what? How bad do you feel for Bills fans? Like we were talking before, we were doing our top five most emotional losses, you know, just for ourselves personally. And just, I mean, that ranks up there as one of the worst gut punch losses you can remember.
You have to, I think, as a Bills fan, think about it as a glass half full thing. How much sweeter will it be next year when they finally conquer the Chiefs and make it to the Super Bowl? Think about how much sweeter it will taste.
Hey, you're a Washington fan. I'm a Giants fan. I would punch my mother in the throat to get Josh Allen as my quarterback.
I would not go that far, but there are definitely illegal behaviors I would engage in to bring him here. Yes.
Well, thank you. I'm a smaller person. It wouldn't really wound my mom that much. If you punch my mom in the throat, it would probably be physical consequences.
I won't do it.
So what for you, Joe, was the second biggest story from the weekend? We all agree Bills-Chiefs was number one. But was it Packers losing? Was it Titans losing? The Rams' near collapse that ends with Brady being eliminated and the way he's talking now, I don't know. I think he's gone. But what for you was the – if Bills-Chiefs was the entree, what was the appetizer?
Honestly, again, this may say more about my glass half full approach to the world. I'm so impressed by the San Francisco 49ers. I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you know – the last time the San Francisco 49ers received the ball and put together a drive and scored a touchdown in these playoffs? Can you recall the last time that occurred?
Oh, let's see. It wasn't last week. That's for sure. It wasn't last week. My memory is so bad. Who did say against Dallas? It would have been in the Cowboys game. Was it the Debo Samuel run up the middle for the touchdown?
So that I should have clarified. That was a one-play drive. So I don't count that as a drive. It was a single play after a turnover. The answer to the question is the second quarter of that game against Dallas is the last time San Francisco had a drive, put together a drive, and went down the field and scored. Now, you know, to go six-plus quarters without scoring a touchdown offensively, but to still – this last week was against the Packers was their third consecutive road playoff game, if you count Week 18 against the Rams as a road playoff game.
I do because
they would have been out. But here they are, you know, going back to Los Angeles, their fourth consecutive road playoff game, and I really like the Niners. I mean, Shanahan owns McVay as of late, and their ability to win in so many different ways, the resiliency and the strategy of minimizing Jimmy Garoppolo's ability to derail your season, it's been very effective. I'm just so impressed. To me, that's the sort of second strongest takeaway from last weekend.
Yeah, I think you're right. It also eliminates Aaron Rodgers, who suddenly has become the biggest villain in the NFL, certainly with Antonio Brown not playing. I think my only concern, because I bet on the 49ers to win outright against Dallas. I knew they'd at least cover last week against Green Bay. But just the images of like Trent Williams and Debo Samuel and George Kittle, and they're all hobbling and limping all over the place. That, I guess, is my one concern.
We had the exact same thing going into this game against Green Bay, though. It was a short week. There were questions about Fred Warner. There were questions about Jimmy Garoppolo. There were questions about Joey Bosa. And yet they went out, Nick Bosa, they went out and took care of it. I mean, you know, all those guys, the miracle of modern science, I guess is the way we'll put it. Those guys all played, and they played effectively.
Wink. By the way, I think once a week I call Nick Bosa Joey Bosa and Joey Bosa Nick Bosa. Like that's it.
Required.
Yeah.
Their parents do it too, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I still call them the San Diego Chargers. I think I deserve at least five more years of getting that one wrong. Do you have any early, like, it sounds to me like you're leaning towards, at least right now, the 49ers, who are 3.5-point underdog. Of course, that might be a home game with the crowd there. What about on the AFC side? The question is just this. Because we're all teasing, we're all taking the Chiefs, but what is the number got to be for you to take the under in the AFC Championship game?
You know what's funny? I honestly kind of love the under in that game. I think that the pass rush of the Chiefs is going to be as formidable as what Tennessee put up there. And I, you know, it sits in the low 50s right now, right? Isn't it in the low 50s?
Yeah, it's like 54 and a half is what I'm seeing it at.
Yeah. So I'm going to go slightly contrary on that. We have some very powerful trends. So in these playoffs so far, all 10 teams that have won the game have also covered the spread. Now, that will obviously occur when an underdog wins outright. But in these playoffs so far, it's 10 for 10. The team that wins the game is also covering. And I don't want to really go against that at this stage. Joe Burrow at quarterback, 5-2 against the spread as a road underdog. Shanahan and Garoppolo are like 14-3 as road underdogs. There's just a bunch of I hate to take both road underdogs, but that's my lean here early this week. I might be persuaded otherwise when it comes time to finalize the ticket, but that's kind of where my head's at right now.
Joined by Joe House again. Follow him on Twitter at House from DC. Check out the podcast Fairway Rolling. Check out the Ringer Gambling Show. Hey, what's going on right now? I'm trying to think. So we've got San Fran. We got I'm just thinking about your NFL Food City playoffs. You got Kansas City, and what's the Cincinnati food?
So is the Skyline Chili. There is a kind of chili that emanated from Cincinnati. It's a little bit of a sweeter note. Now, I will tell you, for the purposes of this House of Carbs food podcast, we have not tracked the outcomes of the playoff games themselves, football games. We put these foods, these iconic food items, in their own head-to-head matchup. The final four that we have right now on the show is the Philadelphia cheesesteak, which is going up against, why am I blanking right now? I haven't had enough to eat yet today, or enough coffee. Philly's going up again. I know I'm going to be mad when I remember it. And then on the AFC side, we have two chicken contenders, the Buffalo Chicken Wing going up against the hot chicken from Nashville. The Nashville hot chicken upset the Kansas City barbecue, which, you know, my own self, I was on the side of the Kansas City barbecue. It has to be.
The Kansas City barbecue, it gives you so much range. And for us Canadians, we don't get a lot of cornbread in our life. Give me the barbecue. You get the beans and then the ribs and the brisket. Oh my God, that is an upset.
Burnt ends. Yeah. I was now the problem is my co-host in this thing, beloved David Jacoby and Mallory Rubin from the Ringer podcast universe. David Jacoby, obviously of ESPN's Jalen and Jacoby. You know, everybody brings their walk of life into these competitions, and the you know, Jacoby's been all around as a ESPN personality, and he just thought the power of the hot chicken up against so he's had ribs in a lot of places. He's like, these are ribs, they're good ribs, I'm enjoying these ribs, but the hot chicken for him did it. So that's where we are at this stage of the game.
Listen, no one says no to the hot chicken sandwich, but still, I'm taking the barbecue. Hey, can I ask you one NBA futures bet and get your thoughts on it?
Absolutely.
Chris Paul plus 6,000 for the MVP. A big night last night against a very undermanned Utah team. But if the Suns have the best record in the West, if Paul leads the NBA in assists, if, you know, there's the odd injury here or there, and everyone loves a good narrative. Chris Paul at plus 6,000. I know it's a long shot. To me, it looks like value. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with the idea that it's value. And now is the time, exactly the time, to be looking for value on these MVP odds because of where we are. It's at the midpoint of the season, and there are yet some stories yet to be written here. And Phoenix is a really quiet, good one, right? They've gone through their own raft of injuries, their own COVID experiences, and here they sit right now with the best record in the West. And if they go on a tear here, right, if over the last 38 games or so, they win, you know, they go like 32-6 or so, maybe not even that good, Chris Paul will be a crucial part of it. And there is a sentiment out there, you know, the NBA Illuminati was prepared to give Chris Paul the MVP of the finals if Phoenix had beaten Milwaukee. He was teed up to be the finals MVP because there is a sentiment in, you know, the NBA community that he has been somewhat under-celebrated, which is kind of a weird thing, except for he's only made it to one finals, and, you know, that was, I think, his second Western Conference finals. So, yeah, I like that a lot. There are a lot of things that push in that direction. If Phoenix can hold on, if they end where they are, and his individual stats, that assist number, he's going to have to lead the league in assists for that to come through, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Robert Sarver controversy, is Ayton going to get paid? And it hasn't affected them. The Suns still, you know, one of the best records in the NBA. Hey, Joe, I wanted to, because you're uniquely qualified to answer this, because your world, a lot of it, of course, House of Carbs and on the Ringer Gambling Show. So betting and the finer things are sort of intertwined within your universe. I wanted to throw a theory by you about sports gambling and wine.
Okay, I'm all ears.
All right, because like I got a couple of years ago, I got my sommelier degree. No big deal. And I think when you start out with wine, you don't care. You're like, oh, is it red? I'll drink it. And you probably just drink Cabernet and that's it. Then you get more into it. You start drinking white. You start drinking other reds. Next thing you know, the only Pinot Noir you're going to have is from Oregon because you've just spent all this time studying it. And suddenly you go from someone who likes to get drunk on a classy glass of red. Now you're versed with all the Grand Cru from Burgundy. Then on the sports betting side, when I started, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, I'll bet the spread. And then you bet the halftime spread. Now you're looking at totals. Suddenly you're parlaying the under for assists for Pascal Siakam with the over total of the game. And now you're someone that, you know, follows the trends and now big time into sports betting. And I found sort of like an analogy where your growth in the two seem to fit.
Okay, I'm feeling it. I'm concerned for you because the amount of time that it takes to cultivate the expertise with the wine, it bumps up into the amount of time it takes to you know, really crystallize credible opinions in the gambling community. Now, I do appreciate that you think of me as somebody capable of that kind of multitasking. I like to think of myself as capable of that kind of multitasking, but I will tell you, as between the pursuits in my life, the gambling on sports takes up quite a bit of time. I think that's the best way to leave it.
It absolutely does. And it shows just in the podcast you do on the Ringer Gambling Show and all the work you do with Bill Simmons. By the way, champagne pairs very well with barbecue. The acidity of the champagne will cut through that fat. Joe, before I let you go, tell everyone where they can find all your great works and podcasts and such.
Thank you very much, Matthew. So the Fairway Rolling Golf Podcast will be up tonight, this week. The tournament is starting Wednesday, not Thursday, because the powers that be at golf know that they need to have a golf tournament wrapped up before Sunday football. They're not going up against it. So Fairway Rolling up Wednesday, House of Cards up Thursday, the Ringer Gambling Show up Friday afternoon, so you can get your final bets in. As always, Matthew, thanks for having me on.
That is Joe House. Always a pleasure. Chat with you soon. Follow him on Twitter, at House from DC. All the best, and good luck with your picks, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Same to you. Thank you, Matthew.
Take care. That is Joe House from, yes, he's on the Friday Ringer Gambling Show that's on 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. By the way, someone writing in about crushing losses. How about the Atlanta Falcons one? Like, you know what? Let's discuss this on the other side. Let's get on this on the other side, because that might be the greatest of all those of all the losses. We'll talk about that in a moment. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Time now for traffic.
This is Gameplay on TSN 1050.
Double or nothing.
Done.
Witness.
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Sound of the day, sound of the day. Here comes the sound of the day.
And for sound of the day, we go back to Tom Brady talking about his future. Have a listen to this clip, and I bet you'll agree, he gone.
Tom, you were asked right after the game, what's next? You said you're going to take some time. When will you begin that process, and how will that go with your review?
Well, I think the point is there's no really rush for me to figure out what's next. You know, I'll know when I know. And I think for all of us, you know, we can all decompress a bit. It's been six straight months of football every day consumed by, you know, day in and day out football. And I think now it's just some time to spend some time with my family and spend some time with, you know, my kids. As I've gotten older, I think the best part is football is extremely important in my life, and it means a lot to me. And I care a lot about what we're trying to accomplish as a team. And I care a lot about my teammates. And the biggest difference now that I'm older is I have kids now too, you know, and I care about them a lot as well. You know, they've been my biggest supporters. My wife is my biggest supporter. It pains her to see me get hit out there. And, you know, she deserves what she needs from me as a husband. My kids deserve what they need from me as a dad. You know, I'm going to spend some time with them and give them what they need, because they've really been giving me what I need the last 6 months to do what I love to do. And it's what relationships are all about. It's not always what I want. It's what we want as a family.
I'm sorry. I think Brady is done. All right. I got a minute left. We were talking about the most painful losses, and everyone's got their own personal choice because it's personal. But I think the worst has got to be the Falcons-Patriots. Not only is it 28-3, but it was also the measure the way they lost that game. They'd run the ball just like two or three more times. They win that game. It's like Matt Ryan goes back to pass, gets sacked, gets knocked out of field goal range. They had these incredible catches that we'll always forget. But here is the ultimate point. Why are Bills fans upset? The overtime rule. Josh Allen never got to touch the ball. Guess what? That game gets tied in the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan never gets to touch the ball. Pats win the coin toss. Brady gets a touchdown. Game over. That is the ultimate gut punch. That is it for the show for today. Overdrive is coming up next. Time now for News Talk 1010 Traffic Update.